Phil. This is Paul Kwame, musical director of the world-famous Fisk Jubilee Singers. And when you want to stay in the know, don't miss Sharon Kay and What's the 411 right here on 88.1 FM WFSK at historic Fisk University.
I wish you could have seen his face, X.
I bet he was shocked.
He was like, at first he didn't recognize himself. And then when he did, he was like, what?
He probably said, when did I do that? Oh, that's right.
That's one of candid camera moments. So, you know, I wish I could have got that expression. Anyway, let me say hello to the lovely city of Nashville. Oh, aren't we glad we got some sunshine in the city? I know I am. No rain or anything today. Well, that's as of right now. Because there is a chance of rain in the forecast for tonight, but I'm just not going to look at that right now. My eyes are shut. And a flood advisory. Where did this come from? Anyway, as always in the Wednesday afternoon mode and style and everything, we have a lot going on for you today on the show. So you'll have your Commander Chuck traffic report. And Ron will be back to give us our news update at the top of the hour. And crammed in between these 2 hours, I've got all kinds of things in store for you. So I am delighted to, before I say hello to our in-studio community news live and in person, X, you know, I always have to touch the dial over there. How you doing?
I'm excellent. And yourself?
Very well. Thank you. You enjoying the sunshine?
Oh, yeah.
Definitely.
Oh, yeah. It's a beautiful day.
Oh, it is now.
Yeah.
It is.
Doesn't spring start like in an hour?
It starts right now.
Right now.
As far as I'm concerned, it's 4 o'clock. Share things on the air. It started.
Okay.
All right. Ding. It's official, y'all.
Because I saw Al Roker this morning. He said, no, 5 o'clock this afternoon.
Okay. That's Al time.
That'll be Eastern
that's not
time.
My
that's
time.
Right. Okay.
It's 4 o'clock. Okay.
So it's 5. So it's officially, so we're 3 minutes into spring.
That did I not say. Thank you. Can I get credit for something?
There you go.
Just kidding, y'all. Anyway, we'll talk weather shortly. But, X, I see a smiling face in here that's familiar.
Yes.
And I heard that voice just a second ago to open my show.
Yes.
And I wonder who that might be.
Yes.
Could that be the director of the world famous
Fisk Jubilee?
I'm just saying. Yeah. Or could it be Dr. Kwame?
Hello.
Uh-oh. Turn him on over there, X. Dr. Kwame.
Testing. I'm here.
Now, he knows about that one. Testing 1, 2. You know, when you're in the business like you are, that's the first thing you're checking is the mics. How are you?
I'm doing very well, and thank you so much for having me.
Oh,
thank you for putting
definitely.
A smile on my face.
Oh, yeah. We got you on that one, right?
You
forgot. That was about 10 years ago.
Well, you know, I forgot, but I'm glad that I did it for you.
Yes,
because
absolutely.
You do so much for Fisk University in Nashville,
well,
and so we have to support you.
Oh, Lord, now you're about to get testimony out of me now. Well, it's just, you know, the name of this show is What's the 411?
Yes.
So if I don't deliver the goods, I might as well change the name of my show to something else. But Dr. Kwame, this coming up this Saturday is a beautiful event, and we have seen the excitement in the people as we've given away the tickets to the Jubilee Singers and Indy Irie, and seen the phones ring up and light up and all that, and people are very, very excited about it.
That's great.
So it just made sense to me for you to be with us to talk about it just a couple of days out in case there's people who are on the fence, not deciding why they should go or whatever.
Yeah.
Now, how long first have you been the director of the Fisk Jubilee Singers?
I've been director of the ensemble since 1994. Actually, just about, So I started in spring of 94.
Okay. Yes. And you have seen generations come and go.
I have, indeed. But it's been a very rewarding journey. God has been blessing, continues to bless.
Yes.
Yeah.
And some of them have grown up and gotten married too, probably.
And have children.
Yeah, my goodness. Now, that to me is a legacy of greatness that you're leaving here for Nashville with these generations of musicians and vocalists, et cetera, that come in to be here, to be, just so people get it, how difficult is it to become a Fisk Jubilee singer?
It is quite competitive because it's a small ensemble that consists of only 16 singers.
Mm-hmm.
And most times I get about anywhere from 30 to about 45 students who come in to audition. And so it is very competitive.
So are they, like, singing in the church choir? Did somebody tell them when they were growing up they could sing? Or are they trained?
I guess students, some who are trained, mm-hmm. some who are not. Some come in because they are interested.
Mm-hmm.
And that also really counts, because without the interest, then being part of the ensemble is just work.
Mm-hmm.
But a student who has interest will come in with a level of commitment to continue this legacy that the original singers left for us so many years ago.
Mm-hmm. Can you give, for the new transplants to Nashville, the capsule? Because I talk to a lot of people in the music industry all over the country, and many of them that are in genres, these folks are not in our soul genre or anything of that nature. They might be in just straight up European world, and don't know a thing about, never heard of them.
Okay,
been in the music industry for a long time, but don't know who they are.
Right.
Talk to them for a second about who the Jubilee Singers are.
Well, the Fisk Jubilee Singers have been in existence since 1871. The ensemble was formed when the Fisk School that was established in 1866 was running out of money. So George White, who was at that time the treasurer, formed this ensemble. There had been plans to build Jubilee Hall, but there had to be a way to make the money. So he put together a singing group with the help of some of the singers like Ella Shepherd, and they changed the Negro spiritual actually into an art form so they could travel around the country and sing. So on October 6, 1871, he left Nashville with these young students. They traveled all over the United States, came back to Nashville with $20,000, which made it possible for Fisk to have this land where we are now. Then he went on another tour with 11 of them. They traveled all over Europe, raised $150,000, which was used in building Jubilee Hall. And that legacy continues
today. That was a lot of money back then.
It was. It was a lot of money. And so they actually introduced the Negro spiritual to the world. And I'm very grateful that Fisk University continues to support this tradition.
Well, that's the piece in the music industry itself that, by and large, most people are not aware of.
Right.
They just think it just started with somebody else. That there's not possible for it to have started here. So, you know, that's why every opportunity I get, I try to have you to tell it so that people can get it in Nashville, number one, but also globally.
Yes.
And I know that in other parts of the world, you all perform all over, that you tell the story.
We do.
But that, to me, is a part of the legacy for Nashville.
Right.
That it lives on and breathes on right now.
It does.
How do you see the Negro spiritual as impacting music, period? How do you see it?
First of all, I would describe the Negro spiritual as music that will live forever.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, these are songs that were created by men and women who never went to school to learn how to write music. But I still listen to these songs every day, and there's always something new that's revealed to me through these songs. And people have been using these melodies in other forms, other genres, just to keep the music alive.
Can you connect that to other genres? Because I'm thinking of at least rap. Gospel.
Jazz and gospel, yeah, okay. Definitely. Or even instrumental music, orchestral music, piano music. People would take... I, as a little boy, learned to play Go Down Moses on the piano when I was in Ghana. So these tunes have been used in different forms and continue to be used in different forms. People even use them in movies. People use them for jingles. But there is just something special about the pure Negro spiritual. It is music that has come to stay with us and will forever be with us.
And that, as the spiritual goes, there's no instruments in this.
When the Feast Jubilee singers sing, traditionally, we sing without instruments. It really goes back to the African tradition where the voice is used for personal expression. The slaves did it, and we do it. And after all, the human voice as an instrument is beautiful.
Yeah, definitely.
When it is put together nicely, it touches hearts of people.
Yeah. So how did you learn all this? I'm all in your business. I'm just dipping.
Well, my father was a music teacher, and so I grew up into music.
Okay.
He had a piano at home, would have me sit on his lap as he played the piano. So I learned initially everything about music from him. He basically has been my inspiration, continues to be my inspiration.
So you grew up, you didn't grow up in the United States?
No, I grew up in Ghana.
And was this type of music, was it a part of your lifestyle?
The Negro spiritual?
Yeah.
Yes, indeed. In fact, I think I was about 4 or 5 years old when a choral group visited Ghana. We lived in a very remote country, so up till today, I don't know how this choral group got to us. But my father took me to this concert, and I remember sitting on the floor in front of him, listening to this choral group. But the only song I remember from that concert is Every Time I Feel the Spirit Moving My Heart, I Will Pray. I still remember that. I can even now still see a mental picture of that choral group as they were singing. So I grew up knowing these songs. We sang them in school. And again, it was because the original Feast Jubilee singers introduced this music to the world.
Wow.
And this music to, I would say, Ghanaians is really important.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely. And because every time you all go out, if you travel or have invitations, they're not just down the street and around the corner. They're global.
Right.
And what a beautiful experience for the students. They just played Carnegie Hall.
Yes.
Now, okay, y'all. Who do you know that just played Carnegie Hall, okay? I'm just saying. That had to be overwhelming.
Well, but that's how God works.
Yes. Oh, yes. Definitely.
Yes.
And I know that we're blessed. This is the first time I think we've ever had 2 interns that are Jubilee singers.
Okay, that's great.
So I was just sharing this with you the other day.
Yes.
That I do notice that they have an air of professionalism about them. Now, might that be the teaching that you all are doing in that department?
Well,
might it be?
I think you just got students who have been specially anointed to help you at this time.
Well, I could tell they're used to, you know, they're just more attention-oriented.
And I think it is also because they want to honor you. I respect you.
Is that what it is?
Yes, I
Well, ex, go get the children and bring them on in here. If they want to honor me, then they need to come in here. Y'all need to come out. Well, it's just that they're both very pleasant and very mannerly.
Right.
And, you know, just I can tell they've been in professional settings.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Well, definitely. I believe that for Feast Jubilee singers as an ensemble to go out anywhere, we have to learn to represent not only Feast University, but the city of Nashville very well.
Yeah. Now, so to try out, if a parent is listening and has a singing child or one gifted on the way here, what is it that they need to do? You know, should give them some pointers.
Well, first of all, it's important for them to know the history of the Fisk Jubilee Singers, because it is not an ordinary singing group.
Yeah.
So anyone who becomes a member of the ensemble needs to know the history, because it is a legacy that is being carried on.
Sure.
Which calls for a very high level of commitment and discipline. Anyone who wants to audition also needs to know what the Negro spiritual is, be able to sing the Negro spiritual, or basically know the difference between Negro spiritual and gospel music, or Negro spiritual and a hymn, because the repertoire of the Fisk Jubilee Singers is the Negro spiritual.
Period.
The Negro spiritual is purely music that was created by slaves during the time of their time on the plantations, music that the original Fisk Jubilee Singers introduced to the world.
Yeah.
And of course, musical types like gospel grew out of the Negro spiritual.
Yeah.
But we want to be able to educate people to know that the Negro spirituals are different from hymns and gospel music.
The students are going to Class X? Oh, man. I forgot they're students. They just can't be here all the time.
We'll get them another time.
Yeah, they got to earn an education.
Right.
But I just wanted to let you know that I noticed that, you know.
I'm glad.
That they have been, like if a child goes to work or a restaurant or somewhere that's never worked before, you can tell.
Yes.
Yeah, you can tell. Yes. And I can certainly tell that they have been in professional environment. So, you know.
That's very good.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yes. Now, what's going on Saturday, and why should our community come out and support?
Oh, Saturday, I am doing my best to hold myself back. We have India Ree again.
Oh, wow.
She was with us last year.
Yeah.
And I had fun. I don't know if anyone else did, but I did. I enjoyed the concert very much. On that night after the concert, somebody asked her if she would do it again. She said, in a heartbeat.
Really?
So India Ree is coming back to sing with the Fisk Jubilee Singers.
Wow.
People, just remember, she just released a new album called Worthy. And we'll be singing some of those songs.
Oh.
And some of the old ones, too. And this, to me, is really a nice relationship-building event.
Yeah.
And so those who are waiting and not sure, we still have tickets. Go to Ryman.com or Ticketmaster.com.
Yeah.
You don't want to miss it. You don't want someone to come and tell you.
You should have gone.
Exactly. Take advantage of it now.
Yeah.
I am looking forward to it, because I know. I've been in practice with the students, with Sharon Sanders.
Yeah.
I know it's going to be great.
Excellent. Now, here's what I'm going to do, because I feel like it today. I got a couple of pairs, and if you get on the phone and call me now, then my 8th and 10th caller, we're going to send you, okay, for this Saturday at the Ryman at 8 p.m.?
That's correct.
And if you call me now, and don't be playing on those phones now, we asked to be what, one touch dialing? This is what we said, X, that's what we said. 325-329-8810, 615-329-8810. Going to send you and a friend to see India Ree, Fisk Jubilee Singers, this Saturday night at 8 o'clock. Call me right now, 615-329-8810. Now, Chuck, I know you're in the helicopter. You've got to keep your hands on the wheel.
Am I the 8th caller?
No, keep your hands on the wheel, Chuck. Do not.
I want to be the 8th caller.
Do not take your hands off the wheel. You're on the helicopter, Chuck. So quit trying to dial while you're giving us our traffic report. Because I know how you get off the track sometimes.
You see me flying.
Yes, I have. I've seen you have good days like today with clear skies, blue, no rain.
Oh, no complaints about the weather, Sharon, that's for sure. Right now, I'm watching them move a wreck that was causing problems earlier. It's actually starting to move better here on 24 East, coming past Harding Place. It's just so heavy this time of the afternoon now as you leave Nashville, headed out towards Murfreesboro, down 24 going east. There's just been a crash at Harding Place at Perimeter Park, and Van Buren at 5th was tied up pretty good at the intersection. To the north, here we go, 65 up through Madison all the way up to Vietnam Vets with heavy traffic. Also headed out towards the airport on I-40 going eastbound. This traffic report brought to you by Obergatlinburg at obergatlinburg.com. I'm Commander Chuck. You're on time traffic.
You're listening to What's the 411 with Sharon Kay.
Want to give your opinion today? The phone lines are open. Give us a call at 329-8810. 329-8810.
What's the 411 with Sharon Kay is brought to you by Terry W. Jones, independent agent, State Farm Insurance. Life insurance is one of those subjects that makes people want to change the subject rather than admit they probably don't have enough. That's why State Farm agent Terry W. Jones focuses on how the benefits of life insurance actually live on by asking people to think in terms of life without having to sell the house, insurance, or life without having to give up college, insurance. Find out how the benefits of life insurance can live on for your family. Call State Farm agent Terry W. Jones in Nashville at 615-256-6066 or online at terrywjones.net and put the life back in life insurance. Be sure not to miss WFSK's Artist of the Week. You can win some brand new music and stay up on the latest smooth and contemporary jazz releases. This week's featured artist is saxophonist Nelson Rangel. His latest release is entitled My Life. Tune in during your lunch break to hear some prime cuts from the new release, an interview with the artist, plus you can win some brand new music. Don't miss the WFSK Artist of the Week during the noon hour on Thursdays right here. Here on Jazzy 88, Nashville's Jazz Station.
Go to the movies. They know the best way to travel is safely.
Hollywood, here we come!
And you know it's super.
To keep your child safe, be sure to use the right car seat for their age and size.
Exactly.
I know you're feeling.
We're finally on the big screen.
Have a seat, my dude.
For more information on finding the right seat, visit nhtsa.gov/the right seat.
Gotcha.
That's a wise move.
Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Support for What's the 411 is being brought to you by Integrity Dental Care. Are you happy with your smile? Are you starting to see bad results from smoking, drinking, bad foods, or soft drinks? Integrity Dental Care would love to help you get your smile back. We do general checkups, cleanings, whitening, and take care of cavities. Consultations are free because Dr. Jacqueline Mitchell wants you to leave better than you came. At Integrity Dental Care, we treat you with integrity and not as a number. All insurances are accepted, including 10 care and cover kids. We're located at Southern Hills Hospital, Suite 314, Building C, and can be reached at 615-445-8700 or online at integritycares.com. Support for What's the 411 is being brought to you by Integrity Dental Care. Are you happy with your smile? Are you starting to see bad results from smoking, drinking, bad foods, or soft drinks? Integrity Dental Care would love to help you get your smile back. We do general checkups, cleanings, whitening, and take care of cavities. Consultations are free because Dr. Jacqueline Mitchell wants you to leave better than you came. At Integrity Dental Care, we treat you with integrity and not as a number. All insurances are accepted, including 10 care and cover kids. We're located at Southern Hills Hospital, Suite 314, Building C, and can be reached at 615-445-8700 or online at integritycares.com. Keep up with the guests and topics on What's the 411 with Sharon Kay. Friend us on Facebook and Twitter. Search under Sharon Kay's 411.
To speak with Sharon or our guest, the phone lines are open. Give us a call at 329-8810. 329-8810. Here again, Sharon Kay.
Alrighty, Nashville. Sharon Kay is in the house. Mighty glad to be on Jazzy 88 WFSK Historic Fisk University. And what's the 411 with Sharon Kay is brought to you by Terry W. Jones, independent agent, State Farm Insurance. Also brought to you by Integrity Dental Cares. And we want to welcome aboard our new sponsor, SAG Funeral Home. We thank you so very much for supporting What's the 411. Now, this 4 o'clock hour, we're going to discuss, now this, I'm not talking about the movie. I know many of you all went to see the Black Panther movie. X, did you go see the Black Panther movie?
I did, a few times.
Oh, did you really?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, this is not the movie. This is the real deal. And that's one of the differences generationally. And I felt it was important to have this guest on because she is, her father is part of the legacy of the Black Panther movement. Let me welcome to the show Kimberly Cox Marshall. She is the daughter of former Black Panther Field Marshal Don Cox. And Kimberly, how are you today? Father's memoir and the history with that.
Oh, all of them are looking down. They are so happy. I am on with Fisk.
I know that's right. So this is what's up. They're touching and agreeing right now.
Oh, yes.
Now, what part of the country? Somebody asked me today when I told them, they asked me who was on. I told them you. What part of the country are you in? Do you live in?
Yes, I'm right outside of San Francisco.
Okay. Now, another question this person asked me today was, how would that make you since your father was the field marshal back in the 60s?
I will be 62 in September.
Okay. All right. Now, I took care of her questions for her. Those were the two things. Well, heck, and I said, well, I'll find out today. I'll let you know now. So, but anyway, having said that, your the release of the memoir, let's start with how that came to be and what our readers can expect to find in those pages that they may have not already known.
Well, my father wrote this book starting in the 80s, and that was one reason I kept the title, is because in those times, these are the words that we use. And another reason was my grandfather told me, anybody can be a nigger. Mm-hmm. It's the way that you act. Mm-hmm. So in my household, it was never a derogatory word towards me. Mm-hmm. If someone said that outside, even my daddy told me, if they say nigger, it's okay. If they call you a nigger, it's time to talk.
Okay.
So I kept the title, Just Another Nigger, My Life in the Black Panther Party, by Field Marshal Donald Cox.
Wow. Now, what's been the reaction so far? You know, everybody's, don't say the N-word, you know. What's been your experience so far?
Well, we've gotten some pushback. Some people didn't want to carry the book, but when I just tell them what I just told you, it gives them pause. Because, like I said, he wrote this then. He finished it, like, early 90s, and he never came back here to really get the flavor of the country.
Mm-hmm.
So, to him, this was just the way that they talked. He, you know, when people would go over to see him, a brother was still a cat, you know. Mm-hmm. That was still his mindset.
So when growing up in the household, do you remember a lot of that when you looked at the book and his memoir? Did a lot of things come back to you as you remember them growing up? And what was the neighborhood and the whole scenario like for you? Take us back to that time.
Well, mostly when I wrote the foreword, I was trying to tell my story.
Mm-hmm.
One thing about Daddy was he kept all of this away from us.
Mm.
When I went to visit him in October of 2010, I was very glad I did at that time. He passed in February of 11. that's when he gave me the book, and I finally read the complete manuscript. And fortunately, I speed read, and he gave it to me one night, and I finished it, like he gave it to me at 6, and I was done with it at 3 that morning. Mm. I couldn't believe this was my father. I grew up one way, and here was this man that did everything that was contrary to the way he raised me. So it was very surprising. I was stunned, basically, because, like I said, all of this he kept away. I was talking to a friend of his, John Handy. He didn't even know that we didn't know the type of things were going on. But it was just, that was his life, and he didn't want to bring it any trouble to us, I guess you could say.
So you didn't see, you know, the different sides of him. He must have done an excellent job of hiding that other life that he was living.
Well, it was just that he didn't bring it around. I'd get on my bike and ride down to the Panther office looking for him, and I would see him in the element. But as far as being able to go to the rallies and things like that, I wasn't allowed.
What were you told?
I just wasn't told anything, basically. Okay. You know, when you're 13, you're really not asking those kind of questions. Mine was just, okay, where's Daddy? I need him right now.
Right.
Okay, I heard he's down here. Let me get on my bike and go to see if I can find him.
Mm-hmm.
It was more so like that. I knew what he was doing. Like I say in my foreword, when the principal talked about my hair when I wore my afro, I knew enough to get on the phone and call my daddy and for him to have a little talk with her. So I knew what was going on. I just wasn't a part of it.
Okay. Now, your father, in terms of was he the National Party head, or was he the California head?
He was the National Field Marshal for the Black Panther Party.
Wow. Now, most people know about or remember Huey Newton and those, the other names that come to mind from, you know, us in the old school.
Right.
Did you interact or meet any of them, and did your father bring them around?
No. What? No. Never met any of them. I've met them, like Kathleen and some of the ladies here, in the last, you know, since Daddy has passed. But when I was younger, I never met them.
Mm. What about Eldridge Cleaver?
No. No.
Wow. I know that a lot of this was shocking to you. It had to be if you didn't know. I mean, you know. Because in the age that you are, you know, you're an old schooler like all of us that's, you know, in this realm.
Mm-hmm.
And we remember watching this on television and growing up, seeing and hearing and knowing, you know, different things that we had heard about the Black Panther Party from, you know, the very beginning until the end. And your father was around him and you were around him and you never knew him. I mean, that is so crazy. That's nuts.
Well, like I said, he tried. When he ran the guns, you know, I want people to get the book so they can hear all these stories.
Yeah.
But we'd come home and there, the FBI around, you know, the car. And my mother, you know, she was 5 feet, 98 pounds, soaking wet, telling them, go away, shooing away FBI. You know, our phones were tapped. We couldn't get away from it, but we weren't on the front lines, I guess you could say.
Mm-hmm. Now, what kind of, if you can remember the times in that area where you lived, what was going on culturally in the community where you were going on, where you lived? Because I know in California, it was different there than in other parts of the country.
Oh, yes. If you can remember the commercials that you always see, and those Victorians, and we call them the painted ladies, and they're in front of a park. That area was all black. And those are $1 million, $2 million homes now. And that was the area where the Black Panther office was. they called it Harlem of the West, Fillmore Street. Black-owned businesses. Back then, you know, we had our banks. We had our furniture stores. That's where everyone congregated. That's was home, was Fillmore Street. I belonged to Third Baptist, oldest black Baptist church west of the Rockies. Mm-hmm. That was in the area. That was two blocks from our house. Mm-hmm. You know, but that whole area, it was just, you know, wonderful. It was family. You know, when you say it takes a village, you knew everybody.
Yeah.
That's how it was.
And what was your knowledge then in the late 60s, mid to late 60s, of what the Black Panther Party was?
I knew what they were, but see, since Daddy kept all of his things so low-key, I didn't really know that's what he was doing until I read this book. You know, I just thought, okay, he's down at the Panther office. He's being a Panther. He's trying to help blacks, you know, and things like that. But to actually read the things I did, you know, like when I read about him going to get Huey out of jail, I had to call my brother because, to me, that was the day you knew you were going to die. There was no way he was going to break Huey out of jail. And he said he was on the 11th floor. How did he think he was going to get down? But his beliefs were such, and he loved Huey so much, he was going to do it.
And that was the Huey movement or something like that?
Oh, yeah. Back then, and this was right after, you know, he went to jail, so they were going to break him out. But little Bobby Hutton and Martin Luther King got killed that week, and security got tight, and that's why he didn't do it.
Wow. That must have been, your mom must have, I'm just saying, you know.
Well, you have to know my mother.
Okay.
The only way I can just say it, my mother was bougie, and that's why they divorced. My mother was over there, and she was not going with Donald Cox and the Black Panthers. It just wasn't happening.
Okay, because I was getting ready to say.
Yeah, no, that it just wasn't happening.
Okay. All right, so, okay, that took care of that portion of my brain. Like, now, where was wifey? You know, during all of this. So she was bougie. Okay.
Oh, yes. And well, Daddy also, you know, he just had a roving eye, too. So.
Okay.
But, hey, it's in the book. It's no secret. So what can you say?
Right. Well, it is what it is. That's all.
Yes.
Absolutely all. Now, oh, wow. You know, it sounds better than a movie to me. Today,
I can look back and I say it was fun, you know, but hey, it was real life, too.
Yes, sir. Yes, ma'am. It was. Yes, it was. Now, Kimberly, hang on one sec. We need to take a break, okay? Take our time now. Oh, wow. Now, I'm going to tell you all, if you don't know, and many of you are not old enough to know anything about the Black Panthers other than the movie, it was a real movement and during a real time period in this country when things were different. But in some ways, I feel like we're rolling backwards. I just don't know what it is about today's world we're rolling backwards. But anyway, I'm happy to have Kimberly Cox Marshall on. She is the daughter of a former Black Panther, and she has recently released her dad's memoir. And we're going to talk a little bit more about the book and the story of Field Marshal Don Cox. But first, let's take a time out, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to What's the 411 with Sharon Kay.
Want to give your opinion today? The phone lines are open. Give us a call at 329-8810. 329-8810.
What's the 411 with Sharon Kay is also brought to you by SAG Funeral Home. SAG Funeral Home has now opened their own crematory services. They are also committed to pass on the savings to our customers, providing and serving all communities within a 50-mile radius of Nashville. SAG Funeral Home also provides full traditional funeral services. For more information, contact SAG Funeral Home at sagfuneral@gmail.com or call 615-244-5044. Visit our website at sagfuneralhome.com and on Facebook at facebook.com/sagfuneralhome.
A wreck near the Opryland Hotel in Two Rivers, downtown, a blockage at 4th and Commerce. A crash slowing the eastern split on I-40 at Fessler's Lane. Bakertown seeing collisions on 24 East just before the Harding exit coming from Briley. This traffic report is brought to you by ICUSecurityInc.com. I'm AJ Rose with your on-time traffic.
We're calling all vendors for the upcoming Fisk Food and Music Festival on Saturday, June 29th. We're accepting applications right now on a first-come, first-served basis for food and non-food vendors with reasonable rates for early birds. The Fisk Food and Music Festival is the place to be in the good old summertime for outstanding music performances in a family-friendly atmosphere on the Grove. Free admission and free parking. Enjoy the Thomas Kane Band, trumpeter Ryan Montano, all the way from L.A., saxophonist Donald Hayes, and headlining our annual Fisk Festival is number one recording artist Ben Tankard. For more information and details about the upcoming Fisk Food and Music Festival, visit our website at WFSKFM.org or give us a call at 615-329-8754. The Fisk Food and Music Festival, Saturday, June 29th.
I really wish Jasmine would answer her phone. She hasn't responded to my text. Where is my friend when I need her? The situation with Mom is getting out of control. I really need to talk to someone. All these pills. Mom has pill bottles everywhere.
Hey, girl, what's up? I see you've been trying hard to reach me. I'm so sorry.
It's Mom again. You're the only person I can tell this to. I have found more pill bottles, pain pills, and this time she was passed out when I came home. I couldn't even wake her up.
All right, Sarah, the time has come. You need to get help, professional help for your mom. You deserve to have the conversation.
To help a loved one or for more information, contact STARS at HaveTheConversationTN.org or 615-983-6803. This public service announcement is funded by the Department of Health and Human Services Office on Women's Health for STARS Middle Tennessee Opioid Misuse Prevention Initiative.
Keep up with the guests and topics on What's the 411 with Sharon Kay. Friend us on Facebook and Twitter. Search under Sharon Kay's 411.
To speak with Sharon or our guest, the phone lines are open. Give us a call at 329-8810. 329-8810. Here again, Sharon Kay.
Already Nashville, Sharon Kay is all in the house. Mighty glad to be on Jazzy 88. WFSK Historic Fisk University. And our book for the 4 o'clock hour is Just Another Nigger, My Life in the Black Panther Party. Field Marshal Don Cox is, this is his memoir, and we have his daughter, Kimberly Cox Marshall, on the phone with us from her home in California. And Kimberly, at first, you know, you don't see the N-word on this cover because of this ink thing. And I just happened, I said, well, where's the... And then I was like, oh, there it is. Okay. Because I was just glancing. I just glanced and I was like, how, there's a word missing. And then when I flipped it toward the light and I saw the reflection, I'm like, okay, dokie. So, yeah, that was a good one. I like that. How you did it.
Yeah, we kept telling the young lady she needed to get an award for this cover.
Yeah, oh, yeah, definitely, definitely. Because, I mean, you know, if you look at it online, you don't get the full effect.
Right,
but you get
right,
the book
right
in your hand. Different story. That's why we don't need to get rid of books.
Okay. There you go.
Now, Kimberly, I hope you have yours with you right at this moment.
Oh, I do.
Okay. And just inside the front cover, can you read that? Just, you know.
Oh, yes. Okay. Yes. Those of us with experiences in the struggle have a historical responsibility to pass them on. Mistakes are the nursery of new ideas, so we must share them too. If we continue to hide and distort our errors, those coming after us will be condemned to repeat them. We cannot afford the luxury of leaving it up to historians to reveal what we did after 50 or 100 years have passed. Present conditions demand we tell our stories now.
Hmm. And that's what your father wrote. That must have been pressing on you. Those are his words.
Yes. Okay. Yes. Yes. The front, back, everything in here is Daddy except the forward and the introduction. Mm. But I think what this is that he wrote this in the 80s. And to read this now, and like he says, demands we tell the stories now. Because it's just as bad, if not worse.
Definitely. Well, and just, you know, it's disturbing that we don't know our history, or it's getting revised and regurgitated, and it's nowhere near what really happened. So I'm glad you... Why did you... were you afraid to print this, or what? What was going on?
Oh, no. I'm a daddy's girl.
Okay.
And the day I die, when he put this in my hands and told me, get this published, I was mad because it was weighing a lot, and I only took a carry-on to France. I'm like, oh, my God. But that's what he asked me to do. I had someone take this from me, had to get a lawyer to get it back, mm-hmm. but I was determined, and it took me till since February 2011 until now. Okay. But I was determined.
Wow. Now, in the first couple of chapters, he kind of gives the background on who he was and et cetera. Just give us some quick on that so we can know that how he started out in life. He's from Missouri?
Yes, he was basically a country boy. They were sharecroppers, growing food like everybody does, and going out hunting how they did back then, and that's how he found his way around guns, though. So that's how that started. His great-grandfather was a teacher, preacher, excuse me. He also married a white woman from Switzerland, which was unusual back then, especially since he had to go to another state because it was illegal to have interracial marriages. Mm-hmm. But he was raised in the church and ended up coming out here and kind of changed after that as a young man.
What was it about California that made the change? Because that's, you know, Missouri Midwest, you know what?
Well, I just... think everything that was open to him, he was, sounds like it was, he was just very sheltered mm-hmm. back there. His father was very strict, mm-hmm. and he was able to come out here and able to go to dances, mm-hmm. and he went to the colleges and just meeting different people. Mm-hmm. Like he said, might not have known it, met gay people, but he all of a sudden saw them, got turned on drugs, didn't know about that. Mm-hmm. Just coming out to California sounds like even now people coming out here mm-hmm. finding their way.
Mm-hmm. Definitely was a whole new world for sure.
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. Now, I wanted to let the audience know that if you have a question or comment and you want to talk to Kimberly, our number is 615-329-8810. Kimberly Cox Marshall is the daughter of a former Black Panther, and he, Don Cox, recently, his memoir was recently released, and we have been in discussion about this book entitled Just Another Nigger, My Life in the Black Panther Party, Field Marshal Don Cox. Now, was he courted to be in the Panthers, or did, you know, I mean, from what you read from the memoir, because I know you cover his life from, you know, the early days. He covered his life from the early days and beyond. But was it just a process over time of being in that environment or what?
I just think it over time. You know, just being there and just wanting to do something and finally got the opportunity, he just jumped at it.
Well, what does he say in the book that made him want to be? Is it because of the being in the group? Because they were seen as the macho men? They were doing the cool stuff in the community? Exactly what do you think the attraction was?
Getting something done. Because, see, Daddy, nobody knew he was really in the party. He wanted things to keep quiet. He wanted to do the things he did. He didn't think, I guess, he could do them if everybody knew he was the face of things being done.
Mm-hmm.
But he knew something had to change. When one of the things he did tell me, when those little girls mm-hmm. died in Birmingham, that it started a fire in him. You know, he really didn't talk about that, but that really upset him a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And he started waking up when he became the manager. He saw things weren't just about getting ahead, you know, getting the next person. It was about money and just things like that started presenting themselves. And he just started awakening, I guess, for him
mm-hmm.
and started doing these things.
Mm. Now, in chapter 6, which is entitled Shake 'Em Up, would this be a sort of him heading in a certain direction? He writes, it was with enthusiasm and honor that we finally met Bobby Seale, the man who, with Huey, had co-founded the Black Panther Party in 1966. It was Bobby who had led the armed Panthers to the state capitol in Sacramento in May of 67. And he was enthusiastic to meet us. Nothing was said directly, but he made it clear he had heard about our activities, and that swelled us with pride. So he was really in there hanging with the guts of the organization, and that had to be exciting for him, encouraging for him to stay in it.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. And, like, the papers that I find and how they said, you know, they killed Huey with their love. You know, they would have done anything for Huey, Bobby, Eldridge, you know, at that time, because they thought they were doing something,
mm-hmm.
you know, and unfortunately things started unraveling and they started seeing different.
Where do you see the unravel at? Was it driven by the pressure, the ego? Where do you see it, knowing from a distance what you're able to?
Well, after reading Daddy's book, it's there's no clear plans. Everybody was caught up in doing something for mm-hmm. blacks, but then Huey God went to jail, Eldridge went to jail, it became Free Huey, Free Eldridge,
mm-hmm.
and there wasn't ever any concise plan on what are we really going to do. It just so happened that they started the breakfast program, which I think is great, because there's a breakfast program out there, that's because of the Black Panther Party.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people don't know that. You know, clothing drives, they started those type
mm-hmm.
of things. So they did do good, and they were trying, but I think there was just really no clear, concise, okay, what are we going to do
mm-hmm.
now?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that was part of the problem, I believe.
Well, also, too, if I remember correctly, that was also a time when black men had guns. And, you know, black men weren't supposed to have guns, okay? But we didn't get gun laws like we do have had until black men started having guns. Now,
you
I mean, literally, I just, you know, because I can just remember them carrying the guns and, you know,
at the Capitol. And see, that's what a lot of people don't know. Somebody said, just let some black men right now start carrying some AR-15s down the street and watch the gun laws change.
Right. I mean,
because when those black dudes walked up on the Capitol, Ronald Reagan
change that law in how many days? 90 days.
Right. It was quick. It was quick.
Yeah.
X, I know you had a question.
Yeah, excellent point, because now we watched the standoff that took place a few years ago when President Obama was in office with the militia out west. Is there a correlation? I saw a documentary a few years ago as the Black Panther began to... I guess his power began to weaken, that gangs sort of took over, took the place of the Black Panthers to fill that void, which sort of is the, I don't want to say cause, but they say that was sort of the first way or the first, that's how some of the gangs in L.A. got started, was the void left from the Black Panthers. Do you have any evidence of that?
Well, in some here in Daddy's book, he talks about that, like when the leadership started waning, that, you know, he'd come back and wonder where was everybody. And he said in here, type of gangs, you know, beating people up and making life miserable. So why would you want to come and help a cause if just because, you know, you might say something that they don't like, you're going to get beat up for it.
Does that make sense, X?
Oh, yeah, yeah. It was an in-depth interview, and so it talked about how the gangs initially came about trying to do good, but eventually ended up fighting with one another, and you know, so we have what we have today.
Well, you know, I'm looking at these pictures in here, Kim, and I, you know, now that I think about it, I recognize his face. You know, I mean, even though I... don't, you know, remember vividly everything from 1960s and to the present. But I do remember, you know, seeing news stories and various things, because you have photos in here as well.
Right, and, right. Well, the one, if you're looking at the one with the three gentlemen, it's June Hilliard, that's David Hilliard's brother, Don Cox, and Elbert Big Man Howard. That was on the cover of Newsweek.
Okay.
So you might remember that from there. And above it, that's, of course, when they were at the Bernsteins at that cocktail party.
What happened? That was a fun
Tom,
one.
Tom Wolfe came, and no journalists were supposed to have any recordings or anything, and he taped it and ended up writing about it the next day. And, it's interesting. The Bernstein's daughter, and she's our age, last year, she wrote about how her parents ended up, they were the Colin Kaepernick of their day. How after the cocktail party, they were shunned. As you know, they were the creme de la creme of New York society. Nobody talked to them. And basically, I said, well, then I guess I was, too, because I couldn't go to birthday parties anymore. But that's what she said, you know, and hey, that's how it was with our family.
Wow.
And but Tom Wolfe, he wrote that book of Mau Mau and the Flag Catchers, and they had a lot of cocktail parties lined up that week, and everybody canceled on them.
Really?
And Daddy was not a happy camper after that.
Now, why and when, as we wrap, did your father go into exile, and when was it?
He sneaked out, I think, in 71, and the reason he did, he said he couldn't fight for the people in jail. He could only do it outside. So he left and went to Algiers with Eldridge.
And he stayed there.
He ended up staying there for quite a while, and he ended up in Paris, and then went down to the south of France, and that's where he passed.
Okay. Did he ever want to come back?
No.
Really?
Never. But he did. He would come back. He came back as a white man.
Really?
On his passport. Yep. Just laid his head. Oh, he came back many times. Stayed in New York a while. But it was just culture shock, I believe.
Okay.
And he said he would just, he'd try, stay a week or two, turn around, and go back home.
I bet it was culture shock. Wow.
Yeah, yeah.
Do pick up the book, for real. Kimberly Cox Marshall.
Time for a movie.
And I'm saying, I mean,
for
there's
real.
A bunch
yeah,
in there.
Real.
It's a bunch that we didn't even get the chance to talk about. Kimberly, tell the audience where they can find the book. Are you on a speaking tour right now?
No, I'm not. But you can get on Amazon. If you have independent bookstores, I always tell people to go to your bookstores. Patronize them. You can get them there, but it is on Amazon.
Okay. Well, we have a black bookstore down the street, and I always, you know, like to just give them a shout-out.
Hey, I heard that.
Because they'll probably likely carry it or have it already. And, you know, keep it on Images Bookstore. But it's, the title is Just Another Nigger, My Life in the Black Panther Party, Field Marshal Don Cox. Kimberly, thank you so much. And is there a website that you have connected with some history on it or something like that, or have you done that yet?
No, we're trying. We're trying.
Okay. Okay. Well, when you do, can you send me the information?
I sure will. I sure will. But thank you. Yes. Like I said, my elders are up there. They're having a good time today.
let me make it even better for them. The radio station is located in W.E.B. Du Bois Hall.
Oh.
Okay. And we're across the street from the Du Bois statue.
Oh.
Now, see, they are just having...
wait, somebody got the vapors. They need the salt.
And if you just get her to get the video, you'll see. You'll know why that has, you know, so... Anyway, now... So now you need to get... You about to have the vapors yourself, I'm sure.
Well, this was just wonderful. Absolutely. You just don't know.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I appreciate you so much and for sharing with us, okay?
Oh, well, thank you. And you have a wonderful day.
You too. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye-bye.
That was Kimberly Cox Marshall, and we thank her for her time today, and do pick up and support her book and this story. Definitely one for... the historical purposes. Anyway, let's go get the quick news, and then we'll be right back.
You're listening to What's the 411 with Sharon Kay.